In 2015, Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg's career was humming along. Her 2013 book, Lean In, had spawned a movement for women to become more empowered at work. Facebook was adding users by the millions and earning record profits in the process. Sandberg was a sought-after speaker and commentator. Then, her husband died suddenly. Her grief and her care for two grieving children competed with her high-profile career. And reeling, she wondered if her home and career lives would ever find balance again. She details her recovery in her second book, Option B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy. Life is never perfect, she writes. We all live some form of option B. It's this option B, vocational detours or disruptions, that I want us to talk about today. What do we do when our vocational lives are disrupted? Where is God when our vocation isn't going as planned? Now, disruption can mean many different things to different people. Maybe you're underemployed, or you're feeling like your career just isn't going and progressing as fast as you'd want it to. Maybe problems in your personal life are impacting your professional life. Could be that retirement isn't all you'd hoped it would be. Or maybe you're a student and your course of study doesn't fit you and you don't know which direction to go. Life simply doesn't follow a straight line. Now, my current job is, as Paul said, is the president and co-founder of the Kilgores Project. We're a mid-sized nonprofit that operates 10 schools in rural Kenya. And when I was beginning my career about 25 years ago, I never would have imagined I would be here. Since graduating from college, my vocation has taken many turns. I've been a young professional, a struggling grad student, a consultant, a waitress, and a temp. I've been laid off and thus unemployed. I've been disabled and completely unable to work. I've been a new mom, both by birth and adoption. And as a mom, I've been a stay-at-home mother, a part-time worker, and a full-time worker. I've worked for myself, a startup, a small business, a mid-sized company, and a large corporation. I've been the lowest employee, moving up the ladder, a manager, and now the boss. And none of those twists and turns in my life were what I would have predicted. And I'm going to guess that all of you can point to twists and turns of your own. So what do we do when our vocation doesn't go as planned? Where is God when our vocational lives are disrupted? This morning, I want us to do three things. I want to look at what Scripture can tell us about how and where God shows up in our disruption. I want to share with you some of what I learned through a big disruption of my own. And I want to give us some takeaways for dealing with disruption in our lives. What I don't want to do is minimize the complexity of tough situations or act like I have this all figured out. I don't want to give platitudes where there's pain. You know, in my time of greatest disruption, I hated hearing trite answers, and I really longed for people to speak authentically about spiritual matters. And that's what I want to offer today. 10 years ago this month, I found myself in the middle of a disruption I never would have imagined. If we go back to June 2007, I was a freelance writer and author. I was working on the Kilgores Project part-time. We had just opened our third school back then. I was caring for our children, our five-year-old daughter Caroline, and our three-year-old daughter Emma, who was newly adopted from Russia. My plan was to take the summer off work to help Emma learn English and integrate into our family, and just to enjoy simple summer pleasures, my husband and my small children. Through June and the first part of July, I fought what I thought was a nagging virus. I had fever and aches and chills, probably from a bug I picked up in Russia. But blood tests and a bone marrow biopsy revealed the real cause: acute myelogenous leukemia, or AML, a serious and deadly blood cancer. Now, acute cancers are different from other cancers. They don't have stages or second opinions. They have a directive. You have a life-threatening illness and you need immediate treatment or you will die. The doctor said, check yourself into the hospital 2 days from now. As you can imagine, we responded with shock and disbelief and tears. How could this be happening and happening now? Any of you who have been thrust into the world of cancer know that you get a quick education on all things related to your disease. And what we found out about AML was devastating. The survival rate was only 20%. After my diagnosis, we spent the following day frantically making phone calls to family and friends, trying to come up with a way to explain to the kids that mommy was sick and getting our affairs in order. The next day, I had surgery to implant a catheter into my chest. And after one more night, a night I spent clinging to my husband, I entered the hospital. My text today is from Matthew 11, 25 through 30. But before we go there, I want to set the scene from earlier in the chapter. It begins with verses 1 through 6, where John is in prison. Okay, John is in jail. It would be an understatement to say this guy's had a big disruption. He's looking for comfort and answers. And so he sends his guys to go find out if Jesus is real. Are you the one we've been waiting for? He tells them to ask. Or should we look for somebody else? Now, Jesus gives John's colleagues a great answer. Just look at what is happening around me. The blind are seeing, the lame are walking, and the ones who need to hear this good news the most are hearing it. Next, Jesus turns to the crowd. Now, we don't know which crowd this is, but it was one of the many who were seeking him and following and listening to what he was teaching. He confirms to this crowd that John is the one pointing the way to him and that John is a prophet. Now, skipping down to verse 20, the Message translation puts it like this. Next, Jesus let fly on the cities where he had worked the hardest, but whose people had responded the least, shrugging their shoulders and going their own way. Even Jesus speaks of vocational disruption of his own. He taught the ones in the cities and they just wouldn't listen to him. And then Jesus prays and he turns to the crowd with a beautiful, tender tone. Isn't this where we want to find ourselves when we have disruption? To where a tender voice is speaking to us in love? I know I did when I was sick. I had many people offering me advice. You know, I'm sure it was well meant, but some of it did nothing to soothe my frightened self. You should be happy for this trial. God is working in you, someone said. If you're a real Christian, you'll skip the medicine and just pray for healing. And another one said, God is testing you. He won't give you more than you can bear. Now, none of that sat right with me or with my experience of God. I didn't feel happy or strong enough to bear the load. I felt confused and scared and unable to pray except in cries. So I turned to my Bible, re-examining how Jesus dealt with sick people to find out what he said and he did with them. And what I found there was so good. There is never an instance of Jesus having anything but compassion for and tenderness with the sick. In fact, in Mark and in Matthew, Jesus is said to be moved in his inward parts when he sees the pain in the crowd. He feels this in his gut. I was reminded of these readings when I was preparing for the teaching today in Matthew 11. You know, here we see another picture of a compassionate Jesus speaking into our circumstances, into our sometimes painful vocational lives. Now, many Bibles will break verses 25 through 27 from verses 28 through 30. But commentators stressed that these two sets of verses are actually tied closely together. So let's read 25 through 27 first. At that time, Jesus declared, "I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and understanding and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for such was your gracious will. All things have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Father, no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son chooses to reveal him." The message ends verse 27 this way, with Jesus saying, "But I'm not keeping it to myself. I'm ready to go over it line by line with anyone who will listen." You know, I like how what Todd and Carla had shared this morning kind of fits into my experiences working with Africans and with Kenyans specifically. When we train travelers to come with us with the Kilgores Project, we talk a lot about cultural differences. And one of the biggest cultural differences to explain is between a culture that most highly values tasks, okay, that's us, and a culture that most highly values relationships, that's Kenyans. You know, in Silicon Valley, we talk about, you know, getting down to business, let's cut to the chase, just get to the point. But Kenyans talk about things going pole pole, or slowly by slowly. You know, or in a conversation, they'll throw in hakuna matata, no worries. Okay, right, you remember that from The Lion King? Right, okay, that is an actual phrase. They didn't make that one up. It does mean no worries. We are all about doing, and they are more focused on being. And it made me wonder if I was bringing my own doing culture bias to this text by wanting to skip verses 25 through 27 and kind of go straight to the action of verses 28 through 30. If verses 25 through 27 are closely tied to 28 through 30, then the starting point isn't our doing, but the unique relationship between the Father and the Son and us. Looking at things this way can give us a different angle on viewing our disruption. You know, the question, things aren't going well vocationally, and what can I do, becomes the better question, things aren't going well vocationally, and who is God? So what can we do when we face vocational disruption? Reframe the question. We can reframe the question so we start with the relationship before the action. Now, when we do this, we lift our eyes off the crashing waves of our problems and onto the solid ground of a loving and unchanging God. At the start of my cancer treatment, I could do nothing more than go back to these snapshots of Jesus with sick people. to these pictures of who Jesus really was. And I found comfort that God feels real pain when his children suffer. In these verses, Jesus offers us a bridge and offers himself as a bridge and a guide to God. You know, this is so good. When we do reframe the question about our disruption, we find a God who is ready to go over it with us, line by line. My cancer treatment began with a month of intensive inpatient chemo at Stanford. And during this time, we waited for the results of the genetic testing on my bone marrow. And when they came in, the results said that chemo alone was unlikely to work for me. Only a stem cell or bone marrow transplant would save my life. It was the answer I needed, but an answer I really didn't want. You see, I knew better than most people what a transplant looked like and the risk that it entailed. I'd visited Packard many times when our friend's son, Matthew, who'd also been fighting leukemia, had been there for his transplant. I knew how sick he was and how demanding the treatment could be. Matthew had relapsed after his first transplant, and his parents moved across the country to seek a risky second transplant. And only a week before, his depleted young body had lost its fight. I cried to God for the loss of a child and for myself. How could this demanding path be the road for me? How could I walk through what I knew might be the valley of the shadow of death? Okay, I cried in the first one. I'm gonna just hold it together for this one. At that time, I had been a follower of Jesus for 22 years, and I'd seen God's faithfulness in my life over and over again. And as I prayed about the transplant decision, God put the image of a neon sign in my mind. Trust me, it blinked. You can trust me, Karen. And so I said, okay, I will walk with you there. Okay, maybe that image was from all the drugs I was on, but I think that's what God was saying to me at the time. I want to take a moment here for my dear husband. Now, I was not the only one experiencing disruption in this situation. In a serious illness, it is naturally the sick person who gets the most attention. How's Karen? Is there any news on Karen? The spouse or the caregiver is often overlooked, and not everyone remembered to ask about his needs or his pain. You know, John went from a guy who was taking on the challenge of balancing his career with a second child in the family to the guy who was supposed to keep it all together while wondering if he would soon be a widow and the single parent of two small children. He has his own story to tell. I can only tell you more of mine. Okay, fighting blood cancer is tricky because you can't do without your blood. But the basics of a full allogeneic stem cell transplant are fairly simple. Through a combination of intense chemo and radiation, doctors kill the stem cells in your bone marrow, which stops them from making enough blood or immune cells. You are quite literally at the edge of your life. Then, in an isolation room, they infuse you with healthy stem cells from your donor and wait to see if your body responds by building new healthy blood. There is nothing pretty or easy about surviving a stem cell transplant. The side effects alone kill some people. On my sickest days in the hospital, I was hooked to 8 IV lines on 22 different medications. I couldn't swallow and had to be fed by IV. I was weak, tired, incontinent, confused, and helpless. From a vocational standpoint, I was at rock bottom. I couldn't do anything for anyone. And even more, I was a drain on everyone around me. Nurses buzzed around me constantly. And because of my shattered immune system, I wasn't allowed to touch the floor, the sink, the trash can, or the toilet. Every surface around me needed constant cleaning. I couldn't change my own clothes, shower by myself, or go to the bathroom alone. I couldn't kiss my husband or hold my children. And in their gowns and masks and gloves, they couldn't touch me either. You know, me, the one who was always the doer and the achiever, could do nothing for anyone. Maybe your situation of vocational disruption feels a little bit like this. You can't move the needle or make the situation better, or you can't make it better fast enough. You are in distress over a situation that seems intractable. Now, your situation doesn't have to be life-threatening to be real. You know, this isn't a contest where only the most extreme situations get God's attention and everybody else is left on their own. Your pain and your disruption matter to God. Let's go back to the text and see what Jesus has to say to that very human and hurting crowd in front of him. Verses 28 and 29 say, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." I find those among the most beautiful words in the Bible, rest for your souls. Isn't that what we all want? For our tired souls to find rest. This is the only place in the New Testament with the Greek phrasing that says, "come to me." Other places say "come," but this particular phrasing is "come to me." It is a unique and personal invitation from Jesus. And in it, he calls us to himself before anything else, to relationship before any action. Now, Jesus was showing this crowd a different way than the 613 commandments that the Pharisees tried to follow. Okay, that would make anybody tired. You know, I can hardly remember top 10 lists, much less 613 commandments. But don't we have our own set of cultural rules and personal expectations we follow in our vocational lives? We have our ideas about how things are supposed to go. And when they are disrupted, we look for answers. The Greek construction here in verses 28 and 29 is written as a parallel. It says, "Come, there's rest. Take, there's rest." And you know, I think Jesus repeats this message because we need to hear it again. Return to rest. Go back to rest. Author and Anglican priest Tish Harrison Warren says this: "In my daily life, I've developed habits of impatience, of speeding ahead, of trying to squeeze more into my cluttered day. How can I love as one who watches and waits for the coming kingdom when I can barely wait for water to boil?" I know how she feels. She continues, "If rest is learned through habit and repetition, so is restlessness. These habits of rest and restlessness form us over time." You know, I wish I had a good formula for what resting in Jesus looks like. You know, if there were one, I would have mastered it myself. But the truth is, there are no spiritual formulas that are lurking out there just beyond our grasp. I like what Tisharrison Warren says about habits and repetition, that we can go back to rest by literally going back to rest. We can return again and again to the places where we find God, the presence of God, to prayer and to Bible reading, meditation, singing or playing music, taking a quiet walk, or seeking a wise friend with a kind ear. Returning to rest is another way of putting the relationship ahead of the action, of the being ahead of the doing. Wherever you meet God, you can return to rest. Now, in a transplant, they call the day you receive your stem cells your rebirth day. That becomes day one, and then you begin counting your life in days from there. By day 30, I was able to leave the hospital, and by day 120, I was released from in-home quarantine. Over time, I went from a daily clinic patient to a weekly one, a monthly one, finally an annual one. And after all this time, in October of 2012, 5 years after my transplant, I was declared cured. My vocation recovered as slowly as my health. It took almost 2 years for me to get back to full strength. Gradually, I could take on tasks at home, care for my kids, and ultimately get back to work. This time, God had a new vocation for me, of working full-time as the president and co-founder of the Kilgores Project. Our small effort that had begun as one building was mushrooming into a network of schools with healthcare and social business components. We were adding staff in the US and in Kenya. And in many ways, this is a happy ending. This is day 3501, and I'm alive. We could just stop there. Now, that's more than 80% of AML patients can say. This year, I've been blessed to celebrate my 20th anniversary with my husband and to see my two beautiful girls grow into teenagers. And the work I've been given changed the lives of kids in rural Kenya. I'm so grateful for that. But I'll tell you the truth, my vocational life still is not all I'd want it to be. Because of my transplant, I live with two chronic illnesses that often leave me tired and in pain. And even leading a nonprofit still has the same challenges of running any business. Disruption is still there. Let's go back to the text now. And this time we finally get to the part with the action for us. With our souls at rest, Jesus now calls us to work, to our vocations, but in a different way from the Pharisees and the religious teachers of the time. He calls us to a way we can wear lightly. Verse 30 says, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." The Message puts it this way, I love this version. "Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." Here again, Jesus is speaking words that are like cool water to our thirsty souls. Now, before we look at what is in this verse, I want to take a second for us to notice what's not in this verse, because I think that's important here. We don't hear Jesus telling us to buck up or not be babies. He doesn't say he's measuring our pain against someone else's. He doesn't tell us to work harder to fix our own problems. He doesn't tell us to suffer in silence. And he doesn't separate work from rest. I love how author Sarah Bessie talks about taking up the light load with Jesus in this video. Take a look.
I think that one of the things that has really stood out to me and has been a huge part of my journey and into the idea of living loved is something that that my dad actually sent to me years ago. It was the Message translation of Matthew 11, 28 to 30, and it said, "Are you tired?" It was right at the time when I was kind of embarking into this season of renewal and change, and it said, "Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come away with me, and you'll recapture your real life. Learn to walk freely and lightly. I will lay nothing heavy or ill-fitting on you." And I just thought, okay, I can breathe here. And I think that sometimes in some way that has become, I don't want to say like my litmus test, but almost something that I kind of unconsciously on a marrow level sort of ask myself, is this heavy and ill-fitting? Is this me getting away to my real life? Is this something that's bringing wholeness? Is this making me tired and burned out and worn out on religion? Or is this me coming away with Jesus and recovering my real life, walking with him, seeing how he does it, moving with him, walking in his footsteps, because that is free and it is light and it is alive and there is nothing heavy or ill-fitting there. And so that's become the, I don't know, basis or the thing that I kind of look at.
Isn't that a great perspective? I really like that video. I'm drawn to this idea of seeing Jesus's drawn to this idea of seeing Jesus's yoke as a check-in point. For a number of reasons, this year has been tough for me, both personally and professionally. I've prayed and worried and churned on many occasions. And if I'm being really honest, there's been a lot more worrying and churning than praying. But about 3 months ago, before the sermon even came up, Jesus brought these verses to my mind. He gave me an aha about them. In my mind, I was grumbling about the many problems in my life and about the fact that they didn't seem to be changing or changing as quickly as I would want them to. I really hated that the burden seemed to be getting heavier and not lighter. And God brought these verses in Matthew to me, in my mind. If the yoke felt heavy or like it was holding me back, it wasn't God. I was the one pulling at the yoke. I was the one straining at what God had for me in that hour or in that day. And it really stung because it was true. I confessed and I asked God just for grace to notice my straining and to bring it to him. Now, it's true for all of us. If the yoke is heavy, it's not Jesus. Now, this doesn't make our problems go away or hurt less, but it gives us a chance to breathe into the pain of our vocational disruption. It's not a call to shape up our attitudes. We can breathe into our disruption by focusing on God's presence within our circumstances and not on the changing of our circumstances. We can use Jesus' test of a heavy or a light load for a reset. What about you in your daily vocation or in your disruption? Are you holding on to something that feels heavy? How could you identify what is heavy and ill-fitting versus what is bringing you wholeness? What would it look like for you to lay down a burden and take up a lighter load? How could you use Jesus' test? For me, this is a repeated process. I've been trying to just stop in my ordinary days and notice when things feel heavy and when I'm really feeling a burden. And then notice when the problem occupying my mind feels ill-fitting And then simply ask for grace to choose a lighter load. I have to do this over and over again, but what I'm finding is that God has given me a renewed sense of his provision, and he's making me able to sort of hit a reset more quickly and more often. I'm trying to use Jesus as test. In the Hollywood version of my story, I don't know who's going to play me, but if you guys have good ideas, come tell me. In the Hollywood version of my story, the movie would end with my husband and kids baking cookies and playfully throwing flour at each other while I looked on with a contented smile. Okay, we do make great cookies in my house, I will tell you that. But my life isn't like a movie, and I'm pretty sure yours isn't either. The challenges of our vocational lives and our vocational disruption are real, and they follow us through various seasons and stages of our lives. As Sheryl Sandberg walked through her grief, she learned a few lessons, which she shared in her book, Option B. She learned how to face adversity, to build resilience, and to find joy. She found new energy to continue with both her work and her family vocations. Option A isn't available, she writes. So let's just kick the beep out of option B. As Christians, we don't have to see our real option B lives as somehow substandard to option A. Are our vocational lives everything we'd want them to be? Probably not. Are they ever out of the care of a loving God? Definitely not. I don't have an answer for why I went through that battle with leukemia, but I can tell you about a loving God who met me there. I also don't have an answer for the problems of a broken world, of poverty and oppression. But I can tell you that God is using a very ordinary me to meet rural Kenyan children in those challenges. I don't know your disruptions or their whys. I don't know if they're of your own making, if they're caused by someone else, or maybe it's just too complex to sort out. But I do know they matter to God. It would lead us to despair to think that God were only to be found in the perfect world of what ought to be. But in Jesus, we have God reaching into the world of what is, to our real, messy, disorderly lives. This morning, we've looked at what Scripture can tell us about where God shows up in disruption. I've shared with you a little bit of my own story, and we've gotten some takeaways for when we face disruptions of our own. In Matthew 11:25-30, we see Jesus assure us of his unique position with God. We see him offering us a real rest, the kind that goes beyond putting up your feet, the kind that reaches into our very souls. And we see him offering us a better way to walk through life and work. What can we do when our vocation is disrupted? Reframe the question, return to rest, and use Jesus' test. We will find a patient and compassionate God meeting us there. Thank you.